to either very deep understanding of the United States as a source market, to a point where I also now think that I have graduated to a point where I have solutions even for some of their perhaps what I would call outstanding issues with the UNWTO that now I now seek to lead in 2017 going forward. So I'm leading a campaign actually to get them back into the UNWTO. It's one of my clarion calls as I campaign that they must be back in the fold together with the United Kingdom, Canada and Australia, because one of my key messages in terms of vision is on universality of UNWTO, that we must build an organization, grow an organization that reflects universality. The entire membership of the United Nations at 192 countries should be reflected in terms of membership within the UNWTO, which currently boasts of 157 countries in terms of membership, 500 affiliate organizations. And I would like to preside over an organization that is absolute membership of the United Nations, because not a single country in the world today can boast that it does not host a tourism economy. It will either be a source or destination or both. So my message is carrying and gaining currency here in the United States, as reflected obviously by the endorsements that I received yesterday from Steve Haines and this Corporate Council for Africa, which is an extension, by and large, of the U.S. State Department in terms of trade and investment opportunities into Africa. And he clearly made a clarion call for Africa to rally behind my candidature, for the global community to rally around my candidature, because they know me fully well. I've been, obviously, in the organization, interacted with them. In fact, just recently they invited me, and he repeated it in yesterday's conference that I am going to lead the restructured Africa Travel Association in an advisory capacity, chairing the Council of Ministers, which will be the highest and apex body of the reconfigured Africa Travel Association after it was acquired by Corporate Council for Africa. And Corporate Council for Africa is a very prestigious organization, well-respected within the United States and in Africa as a trade and investment vehicle, promotion vehicle for United States investment interests into Africa. So that endorsement is by no means cheap. It is arguably the highest that I have received, apart, of course, from State Department's own warmth to my candidature, which they expressed the last time I was here, that they would support me going forward. They think it's good for Zimbabwe. They think it's a reflection of Zimbabwe that wants to belong in the international family of countries. It is a diplomatic turning point to want to assume that position. Obviously, you don't want to assume it when you are in a state of fallout with the rest of the globe. To the extent that we are running for it, it means we are quite comfortable with our interstate relations with other countries, because that's the starting point.
Minister, how is the campaign going so far as Africa's chosen candidate to lead the UNWTO?
So far, so good. Our latest endorsement has come from the United States through the Corporate Council for Africa, who yesterday publicly endorsed me. And I'm sure you know that the Corporate Council for Africa is a trade and investment authority on doing business with Africa. It was followed, of course, by reaffirmation of the African Union's own endorsement of my candidature, which was repeated by the Deputy AUC Chairperson, the African Union Commission Chairperson, and of course Academia, New York State University, who publicly said if they could vote in this elective process, the vote would be mine. So far, so good. I've just come from Venezuela, of course, you know, we're in Venezuela for the Non-Aligned Movement Summit. 8 bilateral meetings with Latin American countries, all of them saying, yes, you are the man for the job. I'm not seeking this position on the back of entitlement, because Africa has not held it in the past, but coming complete with craft competence for the job.
Are you optimistic with all that is happening in Zimbabwe, alleged rights, abuses and all, that you would win?
Well, let's start with the European Union, for example. They had issues with us that resulted in them invoking Article 96 in relation to the ACP-EU Cotonou Agreement. That article, when they invoke it, it applies restrictive and measures and sanctions on the country. They, after satisfying themselves that we have to walk to the path on rapprochement with Europe, they revoked it in November, December 2014, meaning that we currently enjoy a clean bill of relations with the European Union, except for personal sanctions that are imposed on our president and the first lady and one or two sections of our establishment. Otherwise, their revocation is an admission that there was never an issue after all, because they were pushing unilateralism as opposed to multilateralism, which calls for engagement with nation states that they would have disagreed with in the first instance. With regards to the adversity that arises out of the current protests which you refer to, those are just citizen protests, and they are common everywhere else in the world. They don't amount or constitute conflict to the extent that international mainstream media would like the world to believe. I'm sure you would agree with me that from the very beginning there has not been even a single loss of life, which is usually attendant to the kind of protest that we witness elsewhere in the world. The turnouts are also not as astounding as would constitute a security threat to brand Zimbabwe. So we have allowed them as government, to the extent that they're an expression of democratic rights of people to protest, bar their own injury to property and other persona. But we also have admitted along the line that police response to the protest movement has also largely been inordinate, and would hope that the two entities find each other going forward. And I think the moratorium on protest that comes with the police ban is a good thing, in that it is buying time for both parties to reflect on the necessity of a violent protest or response in pursuit of the national interest of keeping our destination as peaceful as it should be, and building on our safety record that we have in the country. I boast everywhere I go of Zimbabwe's 33-year safety record, where we have not lost a single tourist life to insecurity or violent behavior. So we have an unbeaten record, because if you compare us to any other country in the world, you would find that they have had security violations or the tourists have lost lives, even in some of the best destinations in the world, but not in Zimbabwe. We are very peaceful. We are largely peaceful.
The AU has recently introduced a passport. How would that benefit tourism in Africa?
Yeah, it's largely symbolic at this stage. What I would call very practical steps is when we begin to dispense with the visas, as is the case with what Rwanda has done now, Ghana. These are good examples of what should happen, improving openness, but obviously doing it in a measured way that mitigates some of the issues that we are beginning to experience, like insecurities that are targeting tourism. Some parts of Africa have really been victims of that, countries like Kenya and so forth. So we want to do it, but do it in a measured way that balance also our security interests. So we are for safe, secure, seamless borders. And if Europe is a European Schengen visa, where if one person enters through one country, he has entered 27 countries, we are also envisaging an African Schengen, which will facilitate entry even with your own passport from Cape to Cairo. Because we know that the single African passport, while it's been symbolically launched, will take time to be launched. So even with our existing sovereign passports, we want access into Africa by Africans, so that we build a strong African travel trade. At the moment, there's a negative travel balance out of Africa, meaning that there are more people traveling out than those coming in, and we want to plug those leakages and make sure that we retain African cash flows within the continent so that we enjoy our wealth.
How is Zimbabwe going to benefit from you becoming the Secretary General for UNWTO?
Well, in the same manner that the Ghanaians gained when Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, in the same manner that the South Koreans have been benefiting from brand association with Ban Ki-moon when he was UN Secretary General. So there are those spin-offs that arise out of brand association with the men at the top of any UN agency with this country of origin or the sponsor country. So you have obviously a highly enhanced brand presence in a UN. There are only 17 specialized UN agencies. And I'm going to be the chief executive for the tourism one if I'm supported. And being on the table together with 16 others, headed by the UN Secretary General in the chief executive's cabinet or club, will certainly put Zimbabwe on the table and in the cockpit of global tourism. And the benefits are as tangible and intangible as it comes.